Hey, everybody. How you doing? Good morning. Tamika Reed, founder of Women in Linux. Founded Women in Linux because I've been doing Linux administration now for 18 years, going on 19. Never really worked with any women, and in particular, any women of color. So I started a nonprofit called Women in Linux just for that. We have allies in the group. I consider men who join us allies. So no shade on any men who have not joined us in this room here at this particular moment in time. But you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, anything in terms of social media at Women in Linux. Also, I'd like to encourage you to join our YouTube channel. We're working on building up our YouTube channel and would love if anyone in here would like to give a talk or do a podcast. We also do podcasts as well. And we talk about things such as how to be a CTO, move into management, other concepts such as how to even do a startup, funding, just various topics that are concentrated around Linux and infrastructure and just building and building your brand and consulting. So we talk about a various number of things. So you're just not limited just to what we just talked about with Spectra. No shade. All right, so I think this is an ongoing topic for everyone who started out in Linux probably like maybe 3 months ago, or who started 18 years ago or 20 years ago. How do you get into Linux and stay in it or pivot or do something else? So as you can see, I have infrastructure and automation and system architect as the past. And I'll dive into that. I also have present as site reliability engineer, blockchain infrastructure engineer, cloud architect, and engineering. And then future things that I see that are coming my way in terms of jobs, in terms of your current skill set and how they roll over, chaos and intuition engineering, quantum computing, and quantum key distribution and cryptography. Now, I want to give the caveat that your current skill sets that you had in the past and the ones that you have now are still relatable to the future. So anytime someone tells you that, you know, system administration is dead, the title may be dead, but the concepts are still there. You still have people that do backups. You still have people that actually write bash scripts, believe it or not. There are still people that write Python, depending on how old that company is. If the company has been around 40 years, guess what? They probably still have on-prem servers and so forth. So common skills that I often see are that relate to past, present, and future that I often see if you just take a quick look on Indeed or the ladders, pesa.org are problem solving, you know, the scientific method still applies, virtualization still applies, KVM, so forth, all the concepts of virtualization still applies. Cloud. We could talk about cloud on-prem. We could talk about cloud in the public cloud for AWS or Azure or Go. May not Go, but GCP. Also, AI and machine learning. Machine learning and AI are pretty prevalent right now, but in different formats. When I say in different formats, I'm thinking IoT. I'm also thinking about a Fitbit. Those things are still prevalent. We still need that data, and we still are looking to humanize that data, if you understand that concept. Scripting and programming language. I put them together because I didn't want to run out of room on my slides, but scripting in terms of, you know, of course, Python, Ruby, and Go, but if you really think about things like Ansible, understand the background of Ansible and understand the background of Puppet, written in Python, written in Ruby. Things still apply. You learn Python, you write a module, you write Ansible. So repositories, I know if everyone remembers SVN, CVS, anybody still using that? A few in a crowd, again, still applies. However, the concept of those things still apply. Networking, in terms of DNS, DHCP, software-defined networking, very, very popular right now. Telcos are using that in terms of software-defined networking. Places like Comcast, very big on software-defined networking. Automation, I just mentioned Ansible, Chef, Puppet. Performance and tuning. We have a rock star in the house, Brandon. In terms of performance, I don't know if anyone ever checked out his website, brandongregg.com, correct? Check out his website, written books, on, and especially in dealing with perf. Still a big issue when it comes down to performance. Also checking out perf, any of the operating systems in terms of Windows, Linux, or even Solaris all have performance tuning guides. Check them out, read them. It still applies. There may be some adjustments because of, you know, of course, release notes tell you that, but please read those things. Testing and security are still important as well, too. Security in all aspects from when we just saw the Spectra, but then also the physical aspect of security as well, too, is still something that needs to be addressed as well. So past skill sets. Now, I wrote these up here in mind, keeping in mind, and I want you to think about this, is what did you walk into the industry with on day one? What skill sets did you have in month three? And what skill sets do you have now? If you walked in the industry on day one with the skill sets that you had on day one and you're 6 months later, or you're 3 years later and you haven't progressed, I'm gonna actually say shame on you. And I'm not saying that in to be disrespectful, I'm saying that the industry evolves. So you as a person, or you wanting to stay relevant and move forward, it's okay to evolve. And it's okay to say that you actually don't know where to evolve to. However, I want you to understand that you can. So Perl, Bash, and PHP, of course, for scripts. Anyone else work with file server still, NFS? All right, still NFS. And NFS not just from the standpoint of NFS on a Linux box, but NFS from a EMC appliance or from a NetApp or Hitachi still uses NFS version 3 and version 4. Kerberos, we're still there. These are past skill sets that are still moving forward, still the same concepts, still apply. Anybody using iSCSI? Still applies. All right, so authentication. So I got to ask the question, is anybody on this? Oh, I know it's somebody out there on this. Oh, I know it's somebody on this. Stop it. Okay, but hey, guess what? Open LDAP will help you out. You can just kind of, yeah, what is Open LDAP? Who does that? How about IDM with Kerberos in the background? Anybody use Windows in their environment with their Linux boxes? It's probably using Kerberos on the back end to have their Linux boxes talk and do Active Direct, or actually join the AD and get verification there, correct? Anybody? All right, cool. So anybody remember WebAdmin? Yeah, I hear the chuckles. Well, anybody still using WebAdmin? Well, if you're probably on, HostGator, I think they were using WebAdmin for a while. I'm not sure if they bounced off of that. And Pixie Booting. Everybody should be using Pixie Booting or at some form if they're doing bare metal. All right, so along with those things, we all know that security was more like an afterthought. It was, I'm not going to turn on SE Linux. I'm going to turn that off in my Kickstart. I am also, I might put it in permissive mode, but, you know, I'm going to play around with it and come up with some rules, and then I may use cManage to figure it out. Then you rolled over and you said, I'll turn it on. And then row seven came along with Essie Linux, and they said, you know what? We're going to mask IP tables and you're going to use Firewall D. And you said, what in the world was Firewall D? And what do I need to do to turn these ports back on and do these things? So those are things that are still relevant as we continue. But when we start talking about backups, anybody still using LTO 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6? Anybody still using tape libraries from HP or any? What about disk to disk to tape? What about just disk to disk? What about no backups? Anybody here that has no backups? All right, so again, Bacula, if you couldn't afford Commvault, if you couldn't afford Symantec, if you couldn't afford a tape library, you did what you had to do. You spun up a bare metal machine. You hoped it had 3 terabytes. You did a cron job. You rolled that over, and you said, we're going to do a daily, and then maybe do a weekly full. And you wrote that in a cron job, and you did rsync, correct? Anybody still doing that? I know you are, so you don't have to answer. So Zabbix, Xenos, and Nagios. So I don't know if anybody remember Big Brother. Any Big Brother? Old school Big Brother. Oh, yes. Anybody still using Nagios? Because they just don't want to migrate off to anything else because Nagios is so great because it's written in Perl. And I know what exclamation dot period slash hyphen means. When I want something, right? I know what that means, right? Right? And then we got databases. Say we're going to roll over into XML. Remember when XML came out and we were like, that's our database? And then we start saying, you know what? MySQL, we can do that. And MySQL said, yeah, you can, but how about MariaDB? And then he was like, what is that? And then all of a sudden Mongo came out as well. And then MySQL 5.7 came out and said, we can top that. And you have Postgres. So these, again, I say these things are past skill sets, but they still move forward with you. So file systems, EXT2, EXT3, EXT4, now XFS. I didn't put it up there because I wasn't sure what Red Hat was going to do with XFS rolling over into RHEL 8. Hadn't got the deets on that yet, so I don't know if it's going to still be there. I know BTFRS got killed. So RAIDs 0 through 6.0. I think everyone is still using that on their hardware. And jails. Anybody did jails as virtualization? Yes. And KVM and VMware and Hyper-V. So when saying all those things, I'm sure that probably struck a match to some people with their pagers, and they remember it going off at night because Varlog filled up, and they didn't and they didn't want to get up out of bed, and they hoped someone else caught that call or their email that was sent over. So how did we communicate that? It was a pager, it was a nice blinking light, or an email that got filled, and you, because you were so want to be on top of it, you set the alerts to every 5 minutes. And so what happened? Your email filled up. So the form of communications that we had back then were forms, newsletters, IRCs. I think everyone is still using IRC. I was told I needed to get one. I just can't tell millennials that they need to use an IRC because they would look at me and ask me, won't you just use Snapchat? No offense to any millennials in here, that was just a joke. So when I look at the industry, I look at the industry in sectors. I look at it in private, public meaning government, and then you can break that down even further in private if you wanted to with finance and health. But within all of those different sectors, please understand who your customer is. And understand what the needs of those customers are. Those customers can be someone such as a tier one or tier two admin. It could be another set of companies somewhere else at a remote location. It could very well be just someone within your company itself. But when you think about this, think about how all those skill sets that we just talked about and how they apply to this sector. And how do they apply to different sectors? So, we're in the present now, coming forward. All right. So, infrastructure automation engineer. Here's my thoughts, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. You can shout out. You can boo. You can do anything you feel. Just don't throw eggs because I throw them back. I have a few up here. All right, so when it comes to infrastructure and automation engineer, my thought process is if you were working at a small company and you were a sysadmin, you were the infrastructure, you were the automation, you were the backup, you were the networking person, you was the security person, you were all those things. So my thought process on infrastructure and automation engineer has spun out of that, right? Is, you know, we, and this can be a debate. It's kind of almost like a silo in itself, right? In my thought process. Because now you're just doing the infrastructure. You're not doing all the other things. And I think this is company dependent in terms of size. If you're in a 20-person company, you're probably doing a little bit of everything. But if you're in that 1,000, 10,000-person company, you'll probably never see a backup again. You'll make a request in a Nets ticket and hope that somebody reads it and it gets assigned to someone. So those are my thought process. You can bear with me on that if you see my vision. And what you see over here with the CRUD over here, create, read, and update, and delete, is the creation of APIs. No longer are we talking about I'm going to log in and do something with the applications, in particular something like a satellite server, or in particular something like a Cisco or ASA firewall. We now use APIs. So learning, the premise here is learn how to interact with APIs, but not just learning how to interact with APIs, learn those calls through Ansible or Puppet or something of that nature that you're comfortable with, Salt. Learning to make calls from APIs and learning how to create APIs. Prometheus, any Prometheus fans in here? Is that a fan or you just raising your hand? Elasticsearch, how about Elasticsearch with machine learning turned on and PacketBeat, right? So Elasticsearch and PacketBeat is something currently that everyone is probably using or should be using or looking to use. Their enterprise can be a little expensive, but still yet it's still relevant as a present time. And then security. How does everyone keep up with what's going on in terms of security? From the firmware upgrades to an upgrade with your VMware to KVM to your kernel upgrades, those things are still relevant in how you do it and your workflow inside your environment. So here is a public sector overview that I have. If anyone in here in the public sector knows they're heavy in VMware, Jenkins and GitLab is there, but not all teams use it. When it comes down to documentation is 90 pages. It is not an Ansible script. Using webhooks to create documentation is literally read this and do a two-peer review and hope that someone can get through and understand what you've written up with your screenshots. KVM, maybe, depending on the project. But most definitely VMware. Net backup and Commvault most definitely, and system monitoring, good luck. So is anyone familiar with system architecture and going into projects looking at it from a 30,000 foot view? I encourage you all to take a look at system architecture as another route for you to get into system administration. To me, it's like you're taking that sysadmin who's been doing it 100-plus years, and now they need to look at a project from a 30,000-foot view. I encourage you to any project that you get on is to think about system architecture from that view because it gives you a good insight, one, on if you want to do that project or not. Number two, it gives you a good insight on whether or not you want to do something else within that project. So let's take a good example of the CDC. The CDC had a project with rebuilding out all their data centers where they're using big data, some tools, some satellite servers, some all of Red Hat projects. Now the question becomes is, do you want to do the big data part of that or do you want to do the satellite server part of that, or do you want to do the security part of that? And then throw in blockchain. So if you're looking at it from this 30,000 foot view, where do you feel like your skill sets can grow, and where do you feel like that you want to get into? So always look at a project from that view. That's my thought process. Anybody in here heard of TOGAF? All right, so TOGAF is there's a certification out there for it. It's 8 different, I guess you could say, visuals under the TOGAF. One in particular that I am personally a fan of is the first one, is the vision. What is the vision of the project? Because, again, goes back to that 30,000-foot view. If you have that vision, you can then say whether or not you want to do it. Finance. Anybody in here in finance? One person in finance. Okay, so with finance, what you're seeing is a lot of app development. You're also seeing a lot of a back-end with Flask. Some front-end development, too, depending on if you're a startup or not. If you're inside of something like a Cap 1, you may be doing some blockchain. Hybrid cloud, distributed systems, distributed computing, containers, system monitoring. These are all things that are going on. Machine learning and gaming and Bloomberg and the auto industry. I brought up the auto industry because of a couple of things. Has anyone ever looked into DevOps at McLaren? Anybody looked at DevOps at BMW? Those are still locations to work at where they're doing DevOps, where they're actually doing autonomous vehicles, where your skill sets that you have now can roll over and evolve into other things. The future of Linux administration. Site reliability engineer. How many do we have in a room? Quite a few. Awesome. You can yell it out. I don't know if that's okay. They didn't say you couldn't, but did you get started with coding first? Yes, okay. So from reading around, from looking at stuff, strong coding background with site reliability engineer, understanding CAP theorem is another one. It's, you know, understanding SLO, SLA, anybody in here unfamiliar with those terms? Service level objective, service level agreement. No, yes, okay, good. And then time to mitigate, time to detect, time to fix, and time to engage. Kind of self-explanatory, I believe. All right, so on the first slide, I had a book up there, Seeking SRE, and then this one here, the Site Reliability Workbook, are two books that I actually sat through and read like the first 15 chapters just to give this talk. I felt like this talk was a research paper, so I'm probably like a walking encyclopedia right now. But incident management, distributed systems, postmortems, and then the idea of scaling with vertical versus horizontally. So when I think of vertical, and I put an example on the slide, vertical meaning, hey, let's just throw some more hardware at it and that'll solve the problem, right? Versus, hey, no, let's throw another database into the mix or another front-end server or load balance or something of that nature to handle the traffic. Again, site reliability engineer. Chaos and intuition engineer. Anybody here doing that besides Brandon? Brandon, don't raise your hand. Okay. So, again, role of a chaos engineer. So there's a good talk out there. Oliver, what's his last name? Brandon? Oliver? Yeah, I know she is, but what's the other guy? Yes, so Nora Jones is giving a keynote on chaos and intuition engineer. So it's kind of broken up. Like in the one, I forget Oliver's last name from Netflix, it's a 2016 talk, but he gives the idea of chaos, intuition, engineer as together. And then there is chaos engineer by itself. So my greatest view of it is, and this is just my research, was in the picture you see how traffic is heavy, I guess, from your right. So from your right, in the top right-hand corner here, you would see that there's a lot of traffic going into one area. And the idea is if that traffic is, there's trouble in U.S. East at this point, it's a good example, and we need to fill over to U.S. West, we don't want all the traffic to fill over to U.S. West at one time because now we could bring down U.S. West. And so now we have, instead of one place being down, we have two places being down. So the project is called Visceral, and under this project, they're able to visualize how that traffic is being sent across and also what's going on with that traffic. So I like chaos engineering as well and intuition engineering because I like to take the time and throw monkey wrenches into plans. Also, the reliability of that. Hey, if I have, I said that I'm redundant, and this happened on a project I was working on. So they're like, let's do a start and shutdown procedure. They're like, hey, let's just pick random servers to shut down. So they did. They picked random servers to shut down, and it took them 3 days to bring them back up. Why? Because it wasn't, one, it wasn't redundant. Two, it wasn't documented well either. No one remembered the person that worked on it last. And there were several other factors. And they end up losing a couple of machines and had to rebuild from scratch. So if we had something implemented like chaos engineering, we could have actually prevented that. Another thing is defining what the steady state should be. Reading the chaos principles, if you go to a Netflix blog and look up chaos engineering and the principles, it gives you a great idea. I hope you can read that on the screen there. Kind of below you, but you get it. Log analysis, and then the scripting and programming with Python and Go. So anybody in here familiar with CI/CD's continuous integration, continuous delivery? Any big Jenkins fans in here, GitLab, GitHub fans? Good. So we want to really focus on that as well, too, being able to be in a constant, steady state. Also, how your traffic flows. And Gremlin. We're reading a lot on Gremlin. There's an 18-page report on Gremlin to talk about chaos engineering. That's a good report to read. I did not want to read that to you, but if you would like to read a bedtime story to you this evening, I can. So blockchain. Does everybody in here know what blockchain is? No? Yes? Cool. All right. So blockchain, why did I bring that up? I brought that up for a couple of reasons. I brought that up from a security standpoint, not necessarily from just, hey, I'm going to go mine me some bitcoins on a blockchain. I brought it up from a standpoint of Hyperledger Indy. Anybody familiar with the Hyperledger project? Probably Fabric and Sawtooth. Okay, so Hyperledger Indy. Hyperledger Indy deals with DID, digital ID. So the best example I want to give is anybody here ever bought a used car and you read the Carfax? But here's the thing. Anybody else in here ever had a car and you didn't take it back to the dealer or you didn't take it to Jiffy Lube, but your best friend came over and changed the oil for you, right? But he left a screw off or something of that nature? So again, being able to have a digital ID attached to that car, you can now say, well, if this car has gone to this location and this location, you can then, one, have an ID of that car, where it's been, who worked on it, and also that it's immutable. That information can't change. There have been plenty of records out there where mechanics have rolled back the actual engine numbers. There have been situations where people have, even with driving your car, I don't know if anyone ever saw this. This happened to a guy who had a McLaren or he had a Bentley. Either way, he took it to the shop, and he had his camera in the car, and they didn't know it. But anyway, he took it to the shop, and the actual guys in the shop took his car to McDonald's. And so they went joyriding with his car and took it to McDonald's and cracked two of his rims. But they said to him, no, you brought it in like that. But the only thing that saved him was the fact that the car, actually, he had a camera in his car. It ended up costing them $2,500, but they were trying to stick it to him. But I say all that to say, if you can get a digital ID of what mechanic worked on your car, and also what happened with your, what was the state your car was in, there's some tie there we can say, okay, well, we can use blockchain for that. Quantum computing. Everybody's favorite subject right now. I won't mention any major deals that just happened that are doing quantum computing, but I can say Microsoft is another big player in quantum computing. So qubits is the smallest thing inside of quantum computing. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is, and I'm going to slide through these to another slide to show you this, and I'll come back. All right, quantum cryptography. So the reason why I'm showing this is because, as you can see on here, what this example is showing is, hey, I can pass a photon onto my stream. So anybody familiar with photons and lights, fiber lights? Okay. So basically this example is showing, hey, if I take, if I pass my private key off and I have someone sitting on the network snooping, anything that happens with that particular exchange is going to get detected. So once it gets detected, it won't continue to send that information over. So let's back up and show you how that works. So I talked about qubits, but the real part of here is the entanglement. Entanglement works like this. So with a qubit, which is different than a bit, you can have a zero and a one. A qubit says I could be a zero or a one. With a bit, for computers, you're a zero or a one at any time, and a qubit says in one state, I can be a zero or a one. So entanglement says, okay, well, you're passing along these qubits, and based upon your states, whatever your state that you're in, I can then determine whether or not you're a zero or a one, or you could be both. And it gets tricky, and the best person to tell you about this is Physics Girl. I don't know if you follow her on YouTube. She's great on telling about how qubits work and how entanglement works. That's where I got my information from, just being honest. And that's what I learned. And what I also have learned is, in terms of how this all interacts, is how does blockchain and quantum cryptography work together? Where's that next step? Where are we going with security in blockchain, and where are we going with quantum cryptography, and how would they interact with each other? Will one be dominant over each other? And how does this lay out in terms of your environment and your infrastructure? Because there's companies already out there doing it. Microsoft, like I said, just hired 16 people to come onto their quantum team. IBM has a big quantum team. A lot of the research that's going into it, and it won't be in your cell phone, but at least you will be able to use it on in your infrastructure. All right, so other thriving fields. HPC computing, anybody familiar working in that area? Right. So HPC computing, I started out in OpenMuxix, working at University of Washington doing their natural language processing. I was running their cluster. Beowulf, anybody remember Beowulf clusters? Yeah, you should remember Beowulf clusters. And ROCKS and OpenHPC. Some good references here. The supercomputing.org is a good reference. They also have a conference. And then inside HPC. Why do I mention those things? I mention those things because we're still there. We're still using it, and it's still taking off. If you got $1.8 billion going into it in Europe, MIT, and that just came out on October the 15th, is putting in $1 billion into AI and machine learning using HPC. So it's still a relevant field if something you want to get into. Another big one is autonomous vehicles. Think about the data that's coming in as you're driving with autonomous cars. DevSecOps, I go back and forth with DevOps. DevSecOps, if you include security in it, that's kind of DevSecOps to me. But, you know, someone else may disagree. IoT, cloud providers, and VMware, still big, huge companies using it. And gaming, anyone in working for a gaming company in here on the infrastructure? Yeah. So big shout out to you all, taking off in various areas there. I will even throw blockchain into gaming with digital IDs as well, too. Wouldn't be surprised if that rolled out sometime soon. Automotive-grade Linux. Anybody familiar with working with kernels, recompiling kernels, writing kernels? Yeah, so your 2018 Toyota Camry is using automotive-grade Linux. There is a big push to get more kernel engineers as well, too. So if you're looking to work in that field, that is a big, huge push, especially in the car maker industry and especially with autonomous vehicles as well. Again, don't forget, I find these as common skill sets. You can take them and slice them up and dive off into those if you want to. When it comes down to programming language, you can pick one. I'm not advocating this, but there's still people looking for COBOL. Hey, if they're paying $250, cool. In summary, the skill sets that you had back then still apply, but they have evolved. We are evolving as people, so why wouldn't your skill sets? Looking at problems from a 30,000-foot view, try an open-source product. If you go out and read a job description, download the product from the open-source project and install it and play with it and make your own documentation. Good way to learn. The other one is read the documentation. Just read it. Try it. It might do you some good. And also, you don't have to always work at a big company to gain valuable experience. A lot of people go after the big names because they feel like they're going to, you know, have the name on a resume and it's going to go far, when you can have more skills on your resume and it goes as far as the name. And also check out market trends. I'm a big reader of TechCrunch, opensource.com, the Linux Journal, attending webinars, trying out new products, and also create a tutorial. Is anybody in here do blogs other than Ricky? Yeah, write a blog. Just pick a product one day and write a blog on it and just put it out there. Tweet it out there. Tweet it at Women in Linux. We'll make sure we retweet it. But I find that helps you build your brand. That's the entrepreneur part of it. Building your own community around who you are as a person and where you see yourself is very important when you're looking for a new space to work in, or you may want to branch out and work in a whole different arena. GitHub works, but speaking at conferences and building your brand works just as well, too. Nothing to throw shade at that. And I thank you for your time. Hope you got useful information.